Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
night, freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Neutron and Cap Mars, your After Midnight Bombers. Fridays are split between Crawling Into the Darkness with Cam and Break On Through. Saturday, join Aphasiana and Babbler as they teach you the fine arts of part sinner, part saint. And Mondays are split between Victoria and the Hearts of LNP and Mistress M, Mistress Frost and Mr. M as they open up their black lace eyes. These shows are designed so that you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues for thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, my co-host Pamela, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Good evening, Pam.
Hey, Rex. How's it going?
All right. What's up?
Oh, not much. You know, just looking forward to hanging out with you and maybe some other cool poets and, you know, just getting into the poetry, reading, commenting, all that fun stuff. And, of course, you know, staying inside because it's cold. So, you know, but all in all, life is good. And we do have a guest, so I'll go ahead and bring him on. And I'd like to say welcome, Tom. Glad you could join us.
Hello.
Tom, how you doing?
I'm good. Yourself?
Excellent. Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
All right, Pam, why don't we start it off? Where are we going first?
All right, we're actually going to start with what was one of our prompt poems for the contest, Decline and Fall by John Frederick Nimtz. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Decline and Fall by John Frederick Nimtz. We had a city also, hand in hand, wandered happy as travelers our own land, murmured in turn the hearsay of each stone, or, where a legend faltered, lived our own. The far-seen obelisk my father set, pinning two roads forever where they met, waved us in wandering circles, turned our tread, where once morass engulfed that passionate head. Cornice rose in ranges, rose so high, it saw no sky, that forum, but noon sky. Marble shone like shallows, columns too, streamed with cool light as rocks and breakers do. O marble, many-colored, as reach of thought, tones so recollected and so distraught, golden, like swimmers when the August shore brightens their folklore poses more and more. While gray with silver, moon's whirling spell, over the breathless olives we knew well. Ivory as shoulders, there that summer dress. Curved to come shiny naked, then find rest. The tresses love disheveled, leaning dazed and grateful. Or the wayward stone that blazed as cheeks do. Or as eyes half-lowered flare. Violet as veins are, love knows where. Fine coral as the shy and wild tongue tip. Undersea coral, rich as inner lip. There was a stone to build on. Breezes ran in strong corrals at where they closed began, and statues, each a rung or ringing phrase in the soul's passionate cadence of her days. O stone so matched and mastered, work so well, who could believe it when the first brick fell? Who could imagine the unlucky word would darken to the worldwide sigh we heard? Our eyes wrenched together and held fast, each face tightening to a chalky cast. So poor a copy of 1 hour before, who could believe the gloom, the funneled roar, of cornice falling, forum falling all, falling, or dream is falling, not a wall, with eaves to rout the rain, the river swelled till ropes groped in lake bottom, nothing held, clean edge or corner, taking. The black flood left every luminous room tunnels of mud. Earth shook. The columns walked in midair, clashed, and a steep stone exploded as it crashed. Soon the barbarians swarmed like locusts blown between the flood and spasm of our stone, grunted to tug their husks and marble stones, where freezes broke like foam in the blue skies. Blue noses poked, recoiling as they found our young and glad-eyed statues underground, singing salvation, balloon chisels pecked at boy, at girl, one mutilated sex. All our high moments cheapened, reed and grime, charred them in Ricky's filthies, too quick rhyme. Murderous world, that town that seemed a star, rose in our soul, and there the ruins are. We'll not walk there again. Who'd wish to walk where the rats gather and great tourists walk? Who'd walk there even alive, or bid his ghost trail Foster on the melancholy coast? And point. That reminds me. All right, Pam, you pick this one. Why this one?
I actually had three of his poems up as prompts. I found his poetry really intriguing, as the style is almost, it is kind of experimental in that his rhyme patterns aren't always consistent, and sometimes he goes out of rhyme and into free verse in the same poem. I also, the first poem I picked of his was about of loving a clumsy woman, which was a really nice poem. The other poem, I can't specifically remember what it was about. It doesn't stand out to me as right now, but it stood out to me when I picked it as a prompt. Now, this one stood out to me as a perfect opener for the After Midnight, because I felt there was something rather edgy and dark within these lines. Like, so much of this describes the city, the town, the houses, like marbles shown like shallow columns to strings of cool light as rocks and breakers do. And it could almost be calm in its essence, except for there's certain parts thrown in, like the tresses love disheveled, leaning dazed and grateful. There's a kind of a raw sensuality within those lines of that stanza. And then who could believe the gloom, the funneled roar of corns falling, form falling, all falling, or dream it falling, not a wall with eaves to rout the rain? It feels to me like the houses described are a metaphor for a ruler's kingdom falling apart. And I was particularly intrigued with the part where it says, singing salvation, loot chisel pecks at boy and girl when mutilate sex, all our high moments cheap in greed and grime, charred them in rickety civvies to quick line. First of all, that has a wonderful rhyme and flow to it. And second of all, there's just a really eerie, from that part all the way down to the end, there's a real eerie feeling. And what I really like about his poetry is that in one single poem, there's this layeredness that you can derive different thoughts and different feelings from. And when I picked out the poetry for prompts, it was because, like I said, his poetry really intrigues me. And I picked out this one because I felt like out of the three poems, it most set the tone that I perceived to be for, our After Midnight show. So there you go.
There you go.
All right. And Tom, how about you? What did you think of it?
Well, I just was, when I read it the first time and when I heard you read it this time, fascinated by how he, in a sense, builds the city and then tears it down and speaks of it in the ways in which we destroy ourselves at on another level. Soon the barbarians swarmed like locusts between the flood and spasm of our stone, grunted to tug their huts and marble sties, where freeze broke like foam in the blue skies. I mean, even there, the sense that the city is almost more powerful than the people who created itself, so that it draws in its own destruction. You know, it's almost like you build something really beautiful, you almost ask people to destroy it. There's an interesting just sense of, I can't think of the right word to say, but, you know, it's almost as if he can't imagine a universe where you build something good that somebody doesn't have to tear it down.
I like that. Kind of reminds me of a short poem by Lord Byron, which he expanded upon to and brought it forward. Remember Ozymandias?
Yeah.
So this kind of walks on that same thought, but he's expounded on it to the point where he's also brought it forward. Yet those thoughts still walk within this. The far-seen obelisk my father set, pinning two roads forever where they met, waved as the wandering circles turned out tread, where once more ash engulfed that passionate head. And then the cornice, the marble, the thought to everything built in such swirling glamour, kind of rotting. I like that. Different. All right, Pam.
All right. So we have great comment there, Rick. I thought Percy Shelley wrote Ozymandias.
I just said that, Lord Byron. Percy Shelley.
I thought Lord Byron was a different author. Okay. All right. We have one carryover from last week's show, and then after that, Tom, we'll get on to yours. So up next we have Clever Me by Kenny W., and I'll go ahead and give this one a read. And it goes like this. Clever me, I let my soul out this New Year's Eve, and she's not come back. Been over 36 hours now, and I can only hope she drank too much and is resting, and will make her way back in her own time. Okay, should I call the cops? I feel kind of empty, and wonder if they would sympathize, put out an all souls bulletin. I feel dead without her, and she went off with my bluebird. Last seen flying down 42nd Street in the rain, singing. I miss him too, but not so much. Did he plan the whole escape? Was the whiskey and cigarette smoke too much? My soul was planning to leave anyway. We hadn't been getting along. Last year, I ate my heart out. That didn't work out well either. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Tom, why don't you lead us off?
I enjoyed this. Personification of the soul, the bluebird of happiness, and finishing with eating his heart out. Takes the whole feeling of despair and makes light of it. Takes the idea that the way we treat ourselves is going to destroy us, in a sense. It's better that we look at all our bad news and depression and laugh it off and keep on going.
Nicely said. Thank you, Tom. And Pam, you got to read it.
Yeah, I thought this was absolutely wonderful. I really enjoy the humor in it. I like how it's on a serious topic of death, but done in such a way that, you know, there's this kind of irony and this just really delightful, intelligent humor. I like the references to Bukowski, and I like that he opens up with, you know, the nod towards New Year's Eve. It put out an All Souls Bulletin was a clever line, and of course the reference to the bluebird, my bluebird, was also great, as it gave a nod to Bukowski. And, you know, I really liked it all the way through, but especially at the end. Last year I ate my heart out. That didn't work out well either. That was really great. So excellent write and very well done.
Well, she said you too. I think the soul here is the better part of him, his muse, so to speak, that which speaks to who and what he is, because he drops in that note of she went off with my bluebird, which is one of those pieces that he never talked about, never let people in on so much, because that was something personal. So the thought the 42nd Street offers up that angle to where all the detritus gathers in society in New York. And whiskey and cigarette smoke just works into that part of who and what he was and how he dressed his own visage, so to speak. And that my soul was planning to leave anyway. We hadn't been getting along last year. I ate my heart out. That didn't work out well either. I kind of hit on a note of a soured relationship that kind of walked out and left him. So maybe his muse left in the meantime along with it. Nicely done, Kenny. All right, Pam, we're back to you.
All right, and getting back to the room. All right, up next, we have your poem, Tom. So go ahead, give it a read for us, please.
Oh, thank you. Oh, righteous infamy. They came from miles around, town and city, suburbs, landscape, grounds. They shouted and applauded all that was said, knew they were right no matter where led. Having it your way more important than the truth, having your day was why you were let loose. The rule of law matters to the other guy, winning by any means is all that applies. Defy those who doubt you with finger held high. Recant to stay out of jail, 'cause it's a righteous lie. Blame it on the other guy, 'cause we can do no wrong. Blame it on our leader. Say you were strung along. Statues are made to be pulled down. Politicians to be voted out and called clowns. Might is always right unless it's applied to you. Then you scream about the way others made you lose. Being right is easy when you know you're never wrong. You march with any fool who is singing your song. Let's make one thing clear and plain. Justice deprived because I didn't win is a lie by any name. Anyone against us is really quite insane. We know what's good for you. We can claim all that is good and right is always our refrain. So as the boot comes down, we are not to be tamed. End poem.
Great read, Tom. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, why don't you get us going?
I really liked this one. First of all, really great rhyme in here. I especially felt that the last stanza really had kind of elements to it that I could see it being made into a song. What I like is that you wrote to the decline and fall poem and that you saw this as the fall of a modern-day empire and the idea that when, you know, leaders don't think that laws apply to them or, you know, when people, you know, feel that laws are beyond flexible, having it your way more important than truth, having your day was why you were let loose. Having it your way was more important than truth. I feel like that although this is a political poem in nature and a poem on social issues and how dishonesty affects a nation, that one line there particularly stands out as it also applies to relationships and humanity in general, because any one of us can have been in a situation where we could win an argument, but is it worth winning if we're losing more? And, you know, is it worth, you know, winning? And let's make one thing clear and plain. Justice deprived because I didn't win is a lie by any name. Anyone else against us is really quite insane. You know, again, another great line, anyone against us is really quite insane. And you will find that on both sides of the playing field, that if you're not, that whole idea that if you're not for us, you're against us. So just a really clever and thought-provoking write, and I like that you took the prompt and gave your inspiration a modern-day twist. So very well done.
Thank you.
There's way too much truth in here, Tom. This kind of hits on the note of fascism, walking in the front door rather than sneaking in the back door, the sort of... how easy it is to pound everybody that doesn't walk your line of thought with that which others can spout easily for you, like having the media in your back pocket, so to speak, the thought of tearing down that which you don't like so you can renew and rechange and rewrite history so that the ideals and that which was birthed no longer exists does point to pure fascist tendencies, whereas no one actually gets to know from then on, because you sweep history under the rug like everything else along the line, you are bound to repeat the fallacy, the imperialism, and the atrocities that come with disregarding history to begin with. And that's just around the corner is what you're offering up here in that last line. So as the boots come down, we are not to be tamed. And that is, that's a horrible thought when you think about it, because the youth don't know what they've been asking for, yet they might just find out if they get their way.
Right. Well, it takes a lot of maturity to recognize how important the rule of law really is.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. But, it's been so judiciously misappropriated to one singularity rather than having the upper refrain paying their fair share on that angle. It kind of deletes the notice that actually law is applied evenly across the board.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. And I should say this because it's part of what I grew up with. But to Quakers, it's very important that you be put in jail if you protest in a way that breaks the law, because you're not trying to get rid of laws. You're trying to dramatize the wrongness of the law that you're protesting. And therefore, you know, listening to somebody like Spock saying that because the law was morally wrong, there was no justice in him being sent to jail, is really bogus bullshit.
I like that. Yes.
I mean, recognizing our mistakes is great. Correcting them is very good. But we have to do it in a framework that maintains cohesion and coherence. And the minute we start destroying that, you end up with situations like Nixon. Both sides agreed that what he had done was wrong, and because he had broken the law, they impeached him. That doesn't seem to be currently the case. You know, you can break whatever laws you want.
Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think we've been everything's been corrupted to a point of, hey, you know what? It doesn't matter anymore. And
right.
The point being, everything needs to be flushed, cleaned out, and maybe even parts of it rebuilt from anew. Because you look at the FBI seems to be nothing but stormtroopers these days. I mean, they're willing to investigate moms and dads who are complaining about the garbage their children are being taught, yet We've got so many other people out there who are not even jailed, or if they get arrested for a serious crime, they're let out the next day or within hours to commit the crime again. Makes no sense.
Well, you know, I'm going to be very careful not to get into the subject too hard because it'll go on forever. it goes down to things as simple as how do we really want to make our laws, and how do we want to enforce them? And I mean, I always put it in a really simple way. We either going to rehabilitate people or we're going to punish people, because you can't do both at the same time. And if you're going to punish them, it gets expensive because, you know, you're spending anywhere from $40,000 to $60,000 to house a criminal in a proper federal or in a proper penitentiary. So, you know,
right.
Then it's three strikes and, you know, we'll kill you because you're just too expensive to keep around. Well, we have to really change the way we enforce laws and put them into and exercise them and use them. And we have to start thinking about how do we rehabilitate people and how do we support them and work with them once they get out of jail to ensure they don't go back. But you can't have both.
Oh no! Recidivism is huge, and I agree. And there's a lot of laws on the books which really don't apply to some of those who go in and spend way, way too much time in prison for something as tiny as getting caught with a joint, so to
right.
speak. Those type of laws, they need to be revamped, deleted, and the easiest thing, if you want to go that route with some of these lighter things, work farms. It's a great way to instill the thought of honest, hard day's work, and they get paid a bit for their work. They're not housed federally. They're housed in a local situation, and they're actually doing something for the community that they're actually housed in. Yeah. Not that type. Not the chain gang angle.
Well, yeah, that's a work farm. And Parchment Farm is a blues song about work farms.
Well, no, because I lived in Florida, and I had some people that they would call it, they were work release programs. They lived in a facility that was chain link fenced with some barbed wire on top. Nothing more, nothing less. They could escape.
Right.
If they wanted to, but the ease was these were the ones that were coming out and had that opportunity to move on and forward, and they were given up 8 hours of their day. They get to go to a place where they actually worked and learned, and then the other ones who were still transitioning, they were the ones that you took out to clean up along the sides of the roads until they found a position for them too. So there is a workable solution.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, and part of it is when I was going to prisons to run Quaker meetings, because there was a large number of people who were in jail because they wouldn't go, they were pacifists and wouldn't go to war, and ended up working with a lot of the prisoners who were there. And the biggest thing that most of them wanted, by the way, was when they got out, they wanted a sort of a second step program, you know, like a place where you could live when you got out of jail, particularly if you're on parole, and support and helping to learn how to reintegrate themselves with society. Because as one of them said, who had just gotten sent right back, he goes, everything changes so much, you don't know how to act anymore.
Yes, reintegration is an issue.
You know, and there was a whole lot of other points they made. And there have been some really good programs where they have set up what you would call halfway houses or second step programs for people after they've gotten out of jail that have had substantially good success stories. In terms of not only reducing recidivism, but also in helping people become very good at helping other people in the community to avoid going to jail, you know, to find other ways of dealing with situations besides freaking out, getting into involved in an assault charge or getting thoroughly addicted or whatever else you might want to use as a
reason
for getting, you know, the street.
You know, respect you both, and I know this is an important topic, and you are both very interesting to me.
you're right.
But,
poetry first.
Yes, but poetry, perhaps if we should have further conversations based on what other people's poetry inspires us to talk about.
Yes, ma'am.
Go for it.
To the left, to the left,
right,
to the left,
right.
Right,
I appreciate
what's
you
next?
Both. All right, up next we have Sorry, Darling. Oh, So Sorry, Darling by Naomi Sarah. And we have a recording for that one, so here we go.
So sorry, darling. I know you grimace, grunt, and growl so subtly, dear, but I know you do it. With each crash, clatter, and clamor of a glass, a bowl. My chitchetty voice that is rowdy and rambunctious in early mornings when you just want to drink your coffee in peace, read the newspaper, and enjoy the silence. I know. Each time a door or drawer is forgotten open, another plant has withered without water. The litter box stinks up the whole house. The cat meows, pleading to be fed. I know. Those toothpaste splatters in the mirror. Yikes. I know. But tonight I didn't burn your supper. Even rolled the damn garbage bin to the curb. I've picked up all my clothes from off the floor. Even rid the bathroom counters and top dressers of all my hair, nail, and makeup products. Hooray! So hurry home, babe, because I love you so, and because you know how I can make you grimace and grunt and growl and much more pleasing and sinfully so satisfactory ways. P.S. and hun, just in case you're not yet hurrying home. Hey, I even changed the toilet paper roll. Oh, yeah.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. All right, Pam, you get to speak first.
I really enjoyed this one. Naomi has such a great sense of humor. And I love the way her read fits the voice of the woman in her poem. And I like how she like, if you read the prompt poem, love poem, I like how she captured the essence of that and captured the humor of it, but in a voice that's, like, all her own. And I like the little nods to herself. Like, I know... You know, she enjoys talking, and I can just imagine if somebody was a not talker with trying to enjoy their cup of coffee. You know, and I like that she mentions the cat, you know, that the cat meows pleading to be fed. I know those toothpaste splatters in the mirror. Yikes! I know, but tonight I didn't burn your supper. You know, and I like because in the prompt poem, the perspective is from the man. Who loves the clumsy, messy woman. And here's the clumsy, messy woman saying, yeah, you know, I know there's things I could improve on, but, you know, I love you, and I love you so much that not only am I going to be pleasing you in bed to the point that you'll forget about the toothpaste, but I've even changed the toilet paper roll. I mean, that is, if that's not love, I don't know what is. Just an awesome write and very well done.
Well, I think that last line just says, hey, She always leaves the bloody thing empty. and he's left with a with empty fingers. Tom, how about you?
Well, I find myself having a laugh because my wife's the kind of person who, if you want to die young, try to talk to her before she's had her first cup of coffee. And, you know, and I get up and I'm bright and cheerful and I like to, and I like to sing and cook and everything else like that. First thing. And she's the complete antithesis. So you can get along, but it's tricky. What I liked best was if you listen to the I Knows, when she got to the one of talking about the, another plant is withered without water, and the litter box stinks up the whole house. The way she said, I know, sounded like a little cat meow, which I just thought was perfect in terms of the way to read this. Because she had me laughing, and that's really what counts. Because it's been my experience in life. It's not how much another person drives you crazy. It's how much you're willing to love them and accept them for being exactly the way they are. You know, I always like to say, I love my wife down to her last imperfection. And you find her perfect that way. And I think that, you know, she, in here, there's enough little, sarcasm is the best word I can use in the way that she read this, that it was priceless. Had me, I will admit I was chuckling away at 110 miles an hour. And you're right. The problem was that she probably did use it up and leave it empty. Nice tough.
you're absolutely right. But the funny thing is, most women are the other way around. They're the ones complaining about the toilet roll being empty, the hairs in the sink or the shower, or everything else that goes along with this. But Naomi's pointing out the fact, hey, I'm apologizing for being all this to you, but hey, I've cleaned up. Now, I need something when you get home. That something is me on you, which is also funny because it kind of hits on that note of, we get along even despite all this. And there's a little bit of manipulation going on in here just because she's mood for some loving, which adds a little bit of humor to it as well. Nicely done, Naomi. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
Great comment there, Rex. And I have to say that it's definitely a fun write, and it's great to just, you know, have a chance to laugh. And up next, we have Amused by Grant G. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Amused by Grant G. Square pegs should never fit into round holes, but they can, will, and do. For many people never fill their promise, dream, or gain an independent view, which enables them to fall short of any potential they once had or new. Parents, teachers, family, and friends give up before they maybe should, leaving many kids feeling misunderstood and open to chaos and negative blues. After all, I don't think many people set out in life to become homeless beggars, begging to feed an addiction or two, or become sex workers in the lowest realms of that industry, putting up with abuse for a mere paper note, but they do. I say shame on every one of us in this society of fools, or isn't it us who lives our lives judging others while giving a claim to God's rule? Aha, sorry. I found that to be of my own need. End poem. Nicely done, Grant. Thank you. And Tom, why don't we start with you?
Well, Grant's definitely hitting a lot of things right on the head. I mean, you know, as I once pointed out to somebody, if you're going to confront someone, or correct someone, you have to stay with it until the job is completely done, or otherwise you're sort of saying, well, I love you, but only up to this point. After that, you know, screw you. I ain't got time for it. And it's hard, you know, for people to stay with it until the job's done, for all of us. But he touches on those things and a whole lot of other nice little points, and does it with enough sharpness that when he gets to the end, that sort of slight little wink and laugh is just to give you a chance to sort of go, oh, yeah, it could be me too. And they're well done.
Excellent. Thank you, Tom. All right, Pam, what you got?
I really like what Tom had to say, how oftentimes we're only willing to love and accept people up to a certain point, and that we have to come to that realization that, you know, there, but for the grace of God goes us. Yeah, I know you didn't say but by the grace of God, but, you know, that's what it made me think of, you know. And what I really like, you know, as a mother of some four unique children, I like how the first part talks about how oftentimes a child's full potential isn't realized because, you know, we try to fit them into a box. We try to make them line up, sit in their desks, and all think exactly alike rather than focus on their individuality. I also really liked that this was a different style for Grant. Like, I really saw him experimenting with his style. I did also like that it took that sharp turn, you know, where he's almost making the point in the first few lines, that a very kind of almost gentle reminder, and then he hits us hard with, starting with, after all, I don't think many people set out in life to become homeless beggars begging to feed an addiction or two, or become sex workers in the lowest realm of that industry, you know. And what's really interesting to me is that I feel like Grant has taken us into his thoughts because he brings up a serious subject, you know, that, you know, that last, second-to-last stanza with the whole idea of, you know, we act so self-righteous, but we're not. We shouldn't be pointing fingers. We shouldn't be judging, because who are we to do so? And then he almost lightens the mood with, ha ha, sorry, I found that to be of my own amuse. That's the own amuse, first of all. I mean, I just feel like Grant was having a moment where at the end of writing this, he was chuckling to himself and just had to share that with us. And I just thought that was a great ending to this otherwise really just hard-hitting poem about the subject of judging other people. So very well done.
Well said, you, Jim. I think an opening line kind of hits on that square picture that we're fitting around home. But they can, will, and do, because they're force fit. And in doing that, you kind of hit on that note that because of that, people fall between the cracks. There used to be little extra things that they used to do in school back in the day. I mean, shop, woodworking, and some other types of arenas fit into the junior and high school realm, which doesn't get tapped into anymore. And there's still a need for that stuff to, and that's where a lot of kids found themselves, because it was something they enjoyed, something they could get into outside of the necessities of everything else. And hell, they don't even bother teaching kids these days how to balance a bloody checkbook, let alone keep track of their banking record. So we've kind of lost a lot in the meantime of pushing this, that, and everything else, instead of the teaching them how to exist past the thought of 18 and being on their own. I'm back to you, Pam.
I like that, Rex, how you went in the idea of teaching children to be on their own by the time they're 18. I remember reading somewhere once that you should really have your children ready to move out by the age of 16, 17, because, you know, we, oftentimes it is that, that where they turn 18 and they don't have any clue, no clue whatsoever. So,
right.
Very well said there. And let's see what we got next. All right. Up next we have, oops, that's the same poem. Ignore that. All right, let me take that off. And see, I was just so busy listening to your guys' interesting comments. I forgot to grab the next
poem. How about the last? Hey, Robbie dropped up on the board.
I'm glad
how about
I'm here
putting
to
down the toilet seat, hon?
Your own escape.
All right. Up next, we have we got a good full room there in late night poets. You see Naomi, Big Daddy Love. Robbie was in there. There's Robbie. A nice full room. Very cool. All right. Up next we have My Love, My Seeking Eternally Love by Norma St. John Poetress. And it goes like this. Mine dearest Lord, whom hands wretches golden silver at whose quickly touches all globes chipped, edge cups with broken handles with whom fingers palm are in Chinatown blurry linens, have no curry with any softened wares or ways to be my sinking changelings, caught you in a water's fountainheads, oceanside waves, burns, torches, weavers, except all illustrates illness and patience, sad ones, Russian refugee, no certain left at the door, steps, mate. At homestead, defense your story, the gambler's his history, floor received a glass of spring water, sit and wait, my drip red bleed seams, your dear eternity heaven, the lift drivers, terrorists ringing from far blinded spotlights, shine as a moon, reap running before insurmountable, the flings trying to fitness in any space, never on time, servers of rides feel, strays region, stubborns Livingston, green bayside on wayside manners, a wooden handle hammer out of my truck until it hangs a stone from a country private graveyard, the polar colder air only a lonely silence to bear with Wordsworth of many refugees love, yourself leap at ease to leaves others in the traffic, light ship witty birds worships to keep us in devotional Bible readings as a church, at the church as the rings we are in our hands, barefoot, praying knees bare, my brown eyes into you, my smudges are your dreams. Do not forget your Joe beans to spread flannel, garden battleship, unfolded field, our lipstick smudges grins on our white coats, so gladly in love is unbreakable in nature. Heavenly scented skies of God, he is in each of our hands, held in pure glory stone spelt, watershed floats of musical landscapes, bluest color, misshaken eyes beyond the skyscraper. Come be with me, my sweetheart. Early and not too late, smashing potatoes and gravy. I will sturdy listen to music for your interest, for your arms. I will drop everything. Is your career empty-handed bearing, bear my hand into keeps all the dances of the world? Will not have no break into your love. We speak landing leads, my love, for you, my love, my seeking eternally love. And poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Tom, why don't we kick it off with you, please?
It looks like Tom had to go. His brain was turning to mush.
All right. Well, this comes across as a little confused a bit until you actually get into the thought of what she's trying to get into. It is a noted sense of spirituality and the thought of acceptance and giving out hands to help and arms where needed. It got a little bit easier in thought because the first couple of stanzas hit on a number of things from Chinatown to Bayside, Livingston, Reedsville, Lyft drivers and all that. Getting at that was all about city life. Then she hits on the sort of a wooden handle hammer out of my truck into Angus Stone from Country Project Graveyard, the polar cold air only to bear with words worth of many refugees love yourself. And from then on down, the sort of Bible readings, rings and prayers, and understanding the spirituality of God and the love spent therein. And on the back end, not too late, smashing potatoes and gravy. I will study, listen to music for your interest, for your arms. I will drop anything as your clear, empty-handed bearings. And there's a note to the empty-handed bearings, kind of hits on that sort of, do not ask for that which you can do for yourself. All right, Anne, how about you?
Holy smokes. Well, I have to say that was quite the poem to delve into, and I really like what you had to say about it. Before I make my comment, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to bring Robbie on, and I'm going to bring Naomi on. So welcome, Robbie and Naomi. Glad you could both join us.
Hello,
Robbie and Naomi.
To a party.
You want to try
did
that again?
Put the toilet seat down? I hope so.
How you doing?
Not too bad. Enjoying a lot of poetry and music tonight, bouncing between some poetry here and some music elsewhere. It's been nice to unwind that way.
Nice. Well, I'm
glad you stopped in.
Yeah. Hello, Naomi.
Pam, are you
Robbie.
Unwrapping your tongue?
Oh, someone's unwrapping their tongue. Okay, so we have another poem coming up.
Well, I was going to comment on this poem by Norma St. John Hoses. I find it interesting that there's so many religious references here, including, it starts out, my dearest Lord, whose hand wretches gold and silver, those quickly touches all gold's ship edge. And yet there's also a sensuality as if it's simultaneously talking about a lover and a Godhead at the same time. It's interesting to me how there's almost an organized chaos to these lines in the way that they're formed, in the way that there is very little punctuation, which makes for a rather intriguing read where you find yourself pausing at what feels like long moments. And which I think works for the style of the poem, because there's almost this, to me, this kind of idea of someone whose head, their mind rushes from thought to thought, you know, and goes from something as profound as to, you know, how do we get up to heaven? Is there a Lyft driver? You know, it's profound, but at the same time, it's humorous. And before that, we have spring water, sit and wait, my drip red bleed seams. There's as going back and forth from one idea to the next. And somehow they all connect. And somehow what they all add up to in the end is none of these other thoughts matter as much as my love for you, your love for me, that eternal love. I really liked the line, watershed floats with musical landscapes, blue color, misshaken eyes beyond the skyscrapers. I feel like it's, at that moment there's two people living in a city and looking for that potential, that spiritual walk beyond, you know, that journey of seeking beyond the city's lines. I really found this a thought-provoking write and very well done.
Nicely said. Hey, Robbie, did you get to hear this by chance?
A little bit of it. What Pam was saying reminded me of the parable about the eye of the needle. And it's easier for a rich man to go through the eye of the needle than to get to heaven. And I never understood that at first. But this poem, with your comments, Pam, on this poem, it reminded me of that because I finally understood it as when you die, all the material things don't matter anymore. You can't wherever you go, whether even if you go nowhere, you can't take it. You can't take it with you, right? And that kind of, when you had commented on this, that kind of reminded me of that idea that it's like it's all in another realm. So anything from this realm, aside from our conduct, of course, but anything material doesn't matter because it's all another realm, and none of that is going to be going over. So and again, it's all about your conduct and what you did in life, not what you accumulated.
Good there, Robbie. Thank you. And Naomi, you there?
Yep. Yeah, I love how she took the prompt love poem, and she sort of made she starts with "Mine, dearest Lord." So I think this is like a letter to a love poem to God here. And the way she puts in like parts of the poem into it, like flannel gardens, battleship on folded fields, and in our lipstick smudges grins on our white coats. So she put in parts of that poem that was the prompt there. And this is just like intriguing all through. I agree with Pam, you know, it makes you stop and ponder here. And she has so many references to, you know, she goes from Chinatown down to Wordsworth and Livingston and, you know, the Bible and, you know, all through this. And it's, you know, just packed with thought-provoking lines here. So just an enjoyable read. And bravo, Norma St. John, for this write, sharing this write. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you, guys. All right, Pam, where do you want to go next?
All right, up next we have Bedrock Bedlam by Eric Svensson, and we have a recording for that one. So, here we go.
Bedrock Bedlam. Stacked granite packs, mountebank climbs on top of one another. Love's stucco layers soar skywards. Fights to get away from bedrock bedlam. Down there, where soft green moss covers round boulders smolder, fern leaves commiserate like plovers, hustle bustle spores fetch more wisps of purified spray. Delightful deluge drowns sense and sensibility as I, waterfall, plunge over your razor-sharp intellectual precipice. Stacked granite packs, protects your indomitable stature. Only eagles allow to nest upon your impregnable bosom. Cozy niches wherein fuzzy eagle chicks observes love's constant assault. Love's valiant attempt to reshape what's written. Drench, drain, wear down. Erase dark flares upon love's stucco-laid skyward soar. Fights to get away from bedrock bedlam. Thunderous bravado echoes as I waterfall lunge, plunge over your creative ledge. So wedge, set at salient angle when the world was shaped to trip switch, negate all ignoble intentions. If your imposing edifice was sandstone, most certainly I, river, would have veered away from you. Stacked granite packs, like iron-fisted resolve to touch, reach into deep-seated rose quartz crystal cave. My torrents defend as I plunge, sacred sanctum stashed with an austere exterior, known only to eagle parents and fuzzy chicks, doted on by soft green moss below, lauded by silver fern fans in magi adoration. Purified spray laughs loudly in meshed rainbows. Dragonflies and butterflies halo the two of us. Such resolve of passion projectiles outwards. My noble, impregnable edifice bequeathed where molten lava sculpted you. And I, water, became cloud many times, rained down to shape this river, attract you down, found you in this incarnation. End poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And Robbie, why don't we start with you? What do you think?
Well, I always enjoy when nature is personified in a poem. And in this one, it's such a densely packed poem that it's one that I'd want to read over a couple times to get all of the analogies in it and to see the entire, get a sense of the entire narrative. And I like that there was a kind of a tension and yet a cooperation at the same time between two elements in nature in here with the granite and the waterfall. And it tangentially made me think of a couple of things in nature because of how there are these fascinating structures you would never think of. There were like waterfalls within waterfalls. And you say, how is that even possible? And I can't remember all the science of it now. but they are out there. And also, I really like the dragonflies and butterflies that were mentioned that halo the two of us, such resolve of passion projectiles outward. And they're very good, those two insects, to personify that sort of energy. And again, it had reminded me of what I saw when I seen in the fall time when that mating season comes of mayflies. And it's just fascinating to watch. You'll see dozens of pairs of them mating in midair. And it's just absolutely beautiful. And it has there's that creative energy of nature. And that reminded me of it both in how he described it, but also in what it reminded me of. And it sounds like he's talking about love and passion between two people, maybe at this point, because of how they halo the two of us. So it made me think of a couple that's together and the nature's, you know, surrounding them while they're feeling the love for each other. I don't know if I completely missed the mark or not, because it is such a densely packed poem, but that's the other thing that I got through that.
Absolutely. I think you were definitely on the right track there, Robbie. Thank you very much. And Pam, how about you?
I really enjoyed this. I liked how Robbie mentioned, I thought I heard my phone hung up. No, thankfully it did not. But I like how Robbie mentioned the personification and how densely packed this poem is. I have to agree with that. What I see here is the personification of the two elements, the cliff and the water, the mountainside and the water, is the representation of a relationship where people are of very different personalities. The water is ever flowing, ever changing, rising and falling in the mood, almost like mood swings. And I like that the cliff, you know, makes changes, but it does it in a slower time period. It's a representation of a person who very carefully thinks things out before changing. As always, he's got wonderful alliteration in here. And what I like is that the person represented by the waterfall, like says, as I, waterfall, plunge over your razor-sharp intellectual precipice. And then there was another moment talking about, like, either the intellect or something to do with the mind. And so there's this whole idea of appreciating somebody for the full package. There's the admiration of the physical, like the imposing edifice, that very much has words that describes the physical attributes, and yet there's also this appreciation for the mind represented in the razor sharp intellectual precipice. It is wonderful personification. I thought the purified spray, laughter, louds, and meshed rainbows, dragonflies and butterflies halo the two of us. There's this real representation where two partners who are different can find those moments of joy in the small things. It's really just a wonderful rite all the way through, beautiful use of imagery as metaphors. And very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you very much. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with both Robbie and Pam. The use of nature here is just brilliantly, expressed throughout this poem and used. I love the waterfall at first plunges over your razor shape intellectual precipice, and then waterfall lunge plunge over your creative ledge, and then how the water becomes clouds many times, and he even has my torrent defends as I plunge. So he uses himself as water and as a waterfall throughout the poem to show his love, for, like Pam said, the intellectual, the creative part of this person, and to protect them and to, shape clouds that rain over them and shape this river where they that track you down, found you in this incarnation. So I love, and that you both stated the lines that I also found beautiful with the butterflies and the dragonflies there. I think that those lines were just like amazing. Brilliant right here, Eric Simpson. And just a joy to hear you read that poem. So thank you.
He really has a whole library in there, doesn't he? I looked at his SoundCloud and I thought, my God, this guy's got like a whole library. If you listen to even half of or a quarter of his recordings in one day, it would probably take up the whole day.
he's made a lot of SoundCloud.
Eric does grace us with SoundClouds all the time, which is great. We'd love to hear his voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got a couple of things out of this. Where was it? Bedrock Bedlam. That kind of hits me with the thought of that which is set in stone to the point where the noise is kind of deafening to the point that it interrupts who and what they are, which is kind of where this goes. Because down later in that stanza, you were made sandstone, most certainly I, river, would have veered away from you. It kind of hits on that notice of not having that angle of granite where you are strong enough to withstand the withering blend of river, because you're hitting on two thoughts. And then the next stanza down, that's for me, that was deeply sensual in its thought itself. Got right down to the where was it? The rose quartz crystal cave, the magi. The meshed rainbows, the dragonflies, the butterflies, kind of hint on the thought of that which is different in the scenery. And then the passion projectile, that was my noble, impregnable edifice. That hits on a note of strength, one who can withstand even the greatest of that, the bedrock bedlam that it refers to up top. And the water, eye water, it hits on the liquidity of my mind, as well as the strength that is held within water, because even water, even on granite, does have an edge and can erode that edifice to a point where things make a difference. All right, Pam, we're coming back your way.
Great observations there, Rex. And up next we have Eyelid Shades Decline and Fall, My Stories Untold. And Robbie, would you give that a read for us, please?
Okay. So here we go. Eyelid Shades Decline and Fall. Each shutter of my eyes holds memories there. Tapping of the heart brings awareness, life shared. Breathless, such sounds most never hear. As the darkness falls, another moment of life spared, yet fear. A tethered time of rest, the replica of death. In frozen animations, dream, life, form left. To travel within the darkened space, where colors supreme, lest we stumble and fall to our death within the night's dream. After midnight, we live, yet have little control. Searchers we are when awake, yet at midnight stole. Time passing like grains of sand tumbling through each heart beat, time of passing if we only knew. Feeling one next to you, warmth and a faint sigh. A moment only can hear of after midnight. Time passing so precious, most take for granted indeed, as we by the day life spins away as others plant their seeds. O life's spirit, the soul within cries, what about me, it whispers within, often denied. As we wake, thank not one who holds all powers at bay, one who allowed and blessed you with a brand new day. The life unlived after midnight is your soul at peace, or filled with stress and refusal, falling to oblivion so deep. Hear not, feel not, lost in the darkness, refusal to share, and wake with a jolt as though feeling who is there. No answers to why we fear what we cannot see. minds become lost within the black velvet sea. Time passing, we age and wake, withered and torn old fruits on the vine, and suddenly understand with saddened eyes. What does your soul tell you from your gathered dreams? As after midnight when the soul is set free, slipping through the fingers nearest to death, fear not. To wake or not wake, the time we know not.
Great read, Robbie. Thank you very much. And Pam, why don't you kick us off?
Well, first of all, I was glad to see that Stories was inspired. I thought there was a nice flow to her lines. And I really like where she starts out, each shutter of the eyes holds memories there. It gives the idea to me of the rapid eye blinking that happens in the REM stage of sleeping. And I like how within her lines throughout the whole poem, the general idea is delving into dreams, taking a look at the subconscious, like what's below, what is hidden deep within the recess of your mind. I thought there was a nice spiritual tone to this. I really like feeling one next to you, warmth and a faint sigh, a moment only one can hear after midnight. And she mentions that a couple times, the idea of something that can only happen after midnight, something that the way the mind works, the way the spirit works and almost releases itself to be open to thoughts and ideas that it's not open to before midnight. I really like that she touched on that. No answers to why we fear what we cannot see. Mind becomes lost within the black velvet sea. No answers to why we fear what we cannot see. I think that really focuses on the idea to me that we fear what we don't understand. The realm of dreams, the realm of what we perceive as impossible is something we don't fully understand. I thought this was a beautiful, thought-provoking write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Amy, how about you?
I was just reading her note at the end of the poem on the reel of dreams. If our thought will so sleep could be recorded, what would our souls truly have to say? A flicker of the eyelids, our memories of the day past blends and takes the lead. One might ask how much of that is truly me. And I think she reflects this all through the poem, It's very, spiritual, but beyond that poem, diving into yourself and exploring your inner self, through these dreams and through this outer or inner world, inside of us, through dreams. And very interesting, right? And thought-provoking, I found. Made me reflect on, so many things here. And just a brilliant write throughout. So bravo.
Well said, Naomi. Thank you very much. And Robbie, you got to read that. Did a great job. How about you?
I did enjoy reading this particular because it had that lulling sort of a feel to it. It was a little difficult to read, but I think it was intended to have the lack of punctuation, just like we were talking about in the other poem a while back, because it felt like this is like a stream of consciousness sort of thing. And, of course, when you're talking about dream, it is stream of consciousness, right? And towards the end, I got a sense of that our dreams are kind of, to a degree, are directed by us. Like they're dreams or nightmares, depending on what we make of them. And it made me want to, I was just thinking about the movie Dark City, which I just want to see so bad, but I just haven't been able to find it. And it makes me want to watch that movie because that whole movie is about a city that can't wake up from Dream, and I'm just kind of curious how that would juxtapose, would compare with the ideas in this poem. And I just related to it on some personal levels because it's gotten to a point where I've decided to take vitamin D3 and magnesium before I go to bed to try to tame the harsher edge of my dreams, because when I have good dreams, they're really good, but when I have bad dreams, it's like my mind is going through glass, and you know, you get to that point where you're trying to tame that some, right? And but overall, I think it was a very good exploration of what dream and sleep is like, but especially after that time when, how do I say it, the mind is the most tuned to it, most adjusted to it, because like you were saying, after Pamela, after midnight, we live yet have little control, and it's like that, it's like it's reflecting on that primary time that we sleep, like when we have our rapid eye movement, that's the time when we're processing everything the most. And it feels to me like this poem is very much focused on that particular time.
Excellent. Well said, Robbie. Thank you. All right. Need to hit on a couple notes. Each shutter of the eyes hold memories there. It's kind of a notation to the camera. Eye of the camera, the shutter. And the next one down, tethered time of rest, the replica of death, kind of hits me with a note of memento mori, that memory of death, that picture, that notation that one carries. Because she hits on death in this a number of ways, and it is a fear in that, but it's also kind of a fear in living life, because the dream world, that after midnight realm, is where the mind sorts out that which comes on a daily basis that they don't understand yet is registered, and it makes out the thought of what that gets registered in the mind within dreams, and it's supposed to help you flush away some of that stuff that it inundates us to the point where we get overloaded. But she hits on the thought down the back end, time passing, we age awake, withered and torn, old fruit on the vine, and suddenly understand with saddened eyes. And it hits me with sort of wasted too much time not living because you were worried and fearful of that which is. And hits it again. What does your soul tell you from your gathered dreams? And it's after midnight when the soul is set free, slipping through your fingers nearest to death, fear not. Wake or not wake, the time we know not. There's the idea right at the back end. We are born to die and live to die, and we know it. Yet, why spend so much time living within that realm and not enjoying that which you were given in the first place, which is life? All right, Pam.
Great observations there, Rex. I like that you brought up the camera angle, and especially that you really brought up the idea of you know, learning to not be afraid, learning to not live in fear, but to live life to the fullest. And I thought everybody had excellent comments on this poem. All right, I'll grab the next one. And up next we have I Never Feel Bad About Me by Martha Gettle. I'm going to repost the link because I think that will bear it in conversation. There it is. And we got a SoundCloud for that one. So here we go.
I Never Feel Bad About Me by Martha Gettle. Baby, you are able to see past all the things I don't like about me. You make me feel like I'm perfect in every way. Every time you look at me that way, you make me think every time I see the stars that with you I could reach out far. darling, I break things, I do. But those things you always see through. I can be clumsy sometimes, it seems. But I always feel like the answer to your dreams. Yes, you make me feel like I'm perfect, it's true. And you never even seem to try to. You lift me up when I feel down. You make me laugh when I feel like a clown. Baby, just looking in your eyes makes my heart, makes it lift and fly. I can be clumsy sometimes, it seems, but I always feel like the answer to your dreams. Yes, you make me feel like I'm perfect, it's true, and you never even seem to try to. Darling, with you I never feel bad about me. I feel like I'm just what you want me to be. How could I ever ask for anything more than for me to be the one that you adore?
Great read, Martha. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And Pam, why don't you lead us off?
This is another heartfelt love song from Martha. And I thought it fit really well with the first prompt as a response. And what I like is that the prompt poem uses everyday objects like broken coffee cups. And there's really this sense of this simple everyday language within Martha's poem that I felt really fit with the tone of the prompt poem. I really like her chorus, and I like where it says, I can be clumsy sometimes, it seems, but always feel like the answer to your dreams. If you make me feel like I'm perfect, it's true, and you never even seem to try to. I like that this has that sense of adoring somebody fully for all their flaws. And I like how there's this acknowledgement of, yes, I can be clumsy. You know, yes, I, trip over things and, you know, but you're there for me. And, I don't know, it's just really just quite lovely in its tone, acceptance and love. So very well done.
Nicely said, Tim. Thank you. And Robbie, how about you?
When you mentioned grounded, I felt that this was, it's a very grounded and real sort of love in this poem. It's very much the everyday love that all of us feel, and it reminded me of the importance of, and it applies to friendships too, but I think in romantic relationships it gets amplified the most. The importance in the idea of someone to lift you up and make you, you know, feel like you're worthwhile, and, you know, to remind you that, you know, at those critical times that, you know, you're not being silly, or, you know, that you're worthwhile, and especially just those important little reminders that we all need at those darkest times. And it very much had that, as you say, that adoring, very tender. Yeah, I think tender is the right word. Adoring and a tender sort of tone to it, with the way the love is being expressed in this poem. And it was nice to read, or sorry, not read, to listen and actually to comment on one of Martha's poems, because I've heard them a lot being played here, but this is the first time that I've actually commented on one. So that was nice.
Cool. Excellent. And you're right. I thought her taking the soft tonal approach was with this was the right way too. It offers up that kind of realization in truth to, yeah, I'm not perfect, and some things might I break the things I break, and that type of thing, the clumsiness. But it offers up the notation of thankfulness for who and what he is in his acceptance. Nicely done, Martha. All right, Pam.
All right. Great comments, both of you. Up next, we have Love Poem Parody by Diane D. And we have a recording for that, so here we go.
Love Poem, a parody by Diane D. Love her more than fresh linen and mustard sardines on toast. Stretches a dollar up boardwalk, but is some clumsier than most. Jack be nimble, Jack be quick. No, dear, I wasn't talking to you. Go be with the fluffy and feeble. Unbreakable, they are but a few. Skunked in Monday's cribbage with misfits. Can't take her out. Losing herself, yet to a stranger, she finds a way to talk about gout. Do not drop something in a day. It's as rare as a RH blood type. She bends to pick up that pencil, then trips over that ray of light. 360 degrees in a traffic circle. The table and the chairs are bullies. Band-aids to be ripped off slowly. Still doing laundry by pulley. Time is a puffy cloud that rolls. Wait for me on the dance floor. Leave the lipstick in the weeds. Ain't that what sidewalks are for? My dear, I wouldn't trade you for anything in a china shop. Not even in unbroken heaven, where clumsy is not a thought. End poem.
Great read, Diane. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It's greatly appreciated. I like the humor in this. and there's a kind of a note to this of the old Honeymooners with Jackie Gleason and Audrey Meadows. You're the greatest, baby. Love some more than sardines and mustard on toast. Oh, my God. That just sounds rancid. Stretches a dollar up boardwalk, but it's some clumsier than most. I like that. So knows how to make the money work, but it still offers up that note to being clumsy. Jack being nimble, Jack, I wasn't talking about you. Go hang out with Fluffy and Feeble. They don't break. Skunked in Monday's cribbage, there's that knowledge of understanding. Yeah, she stinks at cards, but doesn't have a problem offering up the thought to gout to a stranger. So there's some nice little undertones of humor along with the fact that why he wouldn't trade her in. So nicely done, Diane. And Robbie, how about you?
Well, it was very interesting. It probably wasn't intended in the order of the playlist, but we had Martha doing the personification sort of a love poem and what it often sounds like, and this is a parody of it. So, it was really interesting to hear those side by side. And with this one, there's a couple of maybe because it's a parody, there ended up being some very unconventional and interesting images, and like the leave the lipstick in the weeds. And what I really liked was, I wouldn't trade you for anything in a china shop, even in unbroken heaven, where clumsy is not a thought. And I also liked about the trips, bends over to pick the pencil, but trips over that ray of light. And that's the thing, if there's one thing that we can make a parody of, it's love. And it's funny that a poet speaks of it, because I've had this conversation in the past where sometimes, you're talking to a poet that loves you, and he's like, I love you like the moon and the stars. Your eyes are like iridescent pearls. And he's like, oh, God, just tell me you love me, you know.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Just tell me you want to go upstairs. <You know? laughs> Yeah, so it reminds me a little bit of that, which I think is, yeah. So again, it was really enjoyable to hear a personification and a parody side by side, and hearing how the contribution they both have to what love poetry can be like.
Excellent. Thank you, Robbie. All right, Pam, how about you?
I really enjoyed this. It was a spot-on parody. Meeting the meter of the original poem very well. I also like that, as was mentioned by Robbie, that there's unconventional use of imagery, which I felt really fit well with the poetry of John Frederick Nims, because there is this kind of unconventional use of imagery and everyday objects. So really great observation there, Robbie. And that last part that you were saying just had me cracking up. I really liked this all the way through, but especially Skunked in Monday's cribbage with Misfits Can't Take Her Out. Losing herself yet to a stranger, she finds a way to talk about gout. My stepmother was one of those kind of people who would talk to strangers about gout or anything they could think of. And my family was very big into playing cribbage. Time is a puffy cloud that rolls. Wait for me on the dance floor. Leave the lipstick in the weed. Ain't that what sidewalks are for? There's a kind of a great dark twisted humor there, and the whole idea of you don't need to make your lips red.
You hang up on yourself again, like, Pam?
Can you not hear me?
Huh. Oh, I
can hear
her. Did.
No, well, I can hear her.
While we await her return, I'll see if I can pick something off the board.
You know what? Rex can't hear us.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Let him know. Rex, you can't hear us.
Am I alone here? Robbie, you still there?
Yep.
You know what? Yes, we're both here.
No, I can't hear nothing. What's going on?
Okay, that was what I'm going to do.
There you are.
Shit. Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and call Rex back now. He just heard us just as I hung up on him, but I'm going to call him back. And...
Okay.
Oops, I better. All right. Are you there, Rex? Oh, he's in the green room. Better take him out. All right. Welcome back, Rex. Can you hear us?
I do now.
Okay.
I did right before I got dumped.
I know, but you know what happened is just as I heard you say, oh, I can hear you now, my finger was already on the button. It was simultaneous. So... But I really enjoyed Diane's poem, and I actually, you just got dumped, but you got picked back up.
We could have fun with that, but we were good.
Yes, we were. We were so good.
Yeah, I'll say it.
All right. Shall we go on to the next poem?
Yep.
All right. Up next we have Spilling Brandy by Betty Page. And it goes like this. Rex, I'm back.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I got dropped, but I'm back. Robbie got dropped. I don't know if he's coming back. Did you finish reading Betty Page's poem, or shall I give it a second try?
Well, you said you were reading it, and then everything went black. I thought it got dumped again.
Yes, it's one of those nights. All right, here we go. Once Betty Page's poem, take two. Spilling sweet brandy into my lips cleverly, walking all sideways, holding up fine poles, streets flashing pretty neon above strawberry fields, winding round my curves, titillating touching hands, sucking on fingers, kissing gondolas. We're shipwrecked, yes, we're sinking, all the way down sweet. Brandy, a fine girl, saving time in a bottle to make it with you, spilling so softly into his lips, her nectar in sultry daydreams. End poem. There's some great song references in there, Rex. I think you'll have fun with that one.
You got brandy, fine girl, you got a time in a bottle, spilling so softly, but this is a little more overtly sensual than normal, and it's done in a daydream fashion. I like that. Different. And she kind of hits on the note of actually drinking brandy itself, even though the piece about the daydream of brandy and what brandy does to him. I like this. Nice piece, Betty. Different. All right. What you got?
I have to say, yeah, this was enjoyable. It had a sensuality to it. But not there was this kind of this whole idea of appreciating the sultry, as it says, in sultry daydreams. Like the idea of when somebody's constantly on your mind. I really like the imagery of into my lips cleverly walking all sideways. I thought that was really great imagery. And I liked all the song references, like Strawberry Fields and Message in a Bottle. So really just a wonderful brevity. I thought really the most interesting one was Kissing Gondolas, We're Shipwrecked, Yes, We're Sinking. I thought that was great imagery in the whole idea of two people, attracted to each other despite the fact that life is a shipwreck around them. Thought that was very well done.
Well, actually, that might work the other way. He's taking that gondola ride. It's supposed to be alluring and sensual. You're there for that because the guy is supposed to sing Italian, and the idea would be to get shipwrecked in that moment.
I like that. I like that, the idea of getting lost in the moment. Very cool. Yeah, I saw this meme, this picture, that it was of this old couple in a gondola sleeping, and it said, why you shouldn't wait to take that vacation. all right. Let's see what we have next. And... All right. Up next, we have Eulogy by Rich F. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Eulogy by Rich F. Primetime poet. Perfect ether channel. Epithets and pearls on silken thread. Fills our heaving hearts with fiction flannel. Ignites our hidden hopes that once lay dead. His feral phrases skip across the page, his metaphoric meter all the rage. He casts his cotton clouds about our heads, cumulus accumulates as so many lovers leap, on frantic feather duster beds, and making rolling swirling waves of pristine pleasure, our passions prance across the oceans, pirates all in search of tantric, tantalizing buried treasure, smash to pieces our emotions. The astral artist simpers sighs and weaves
his wordless, breathless paint, Gretschy's 78 stay in their sleeves. Discord now the music caught between our hearts in chaos, damned disharmony. Beseeching now, oh, sing your eulogy. Recite your lays robotic with no feeling. Your empty vessel verses verify. The band betrays the rhythm and the meaning. Liturgic minstrels moan and clarify your late and latest love to amplify. Your placid platitudes so temperamental, pentameter so tight and so carefree. You spill your inner thoughts, experimental, disturb our discontented reverie. Your beads of languid love and hope, this white paint splish-splash splattered sable sky, a cosmic craze kaleidoscope, glowing orbs near naked to the eye. Earthbound poet grounded now, unaware of wormholes, has no time for warp drives, multiverse and parallel lives. String theory is just a footnote query. The mystic manner of the moon, lunatic and dead too soon, his way to Monday morning mundane madness. Lovers ground down, damning gravity, smashing clumsy cups of sadness, spill their morning tea. The fortune tellers leave, scattering now the lipstick, spreading rumors on a gentleman's collar. Family fortunes bought and sold, or a tarnished, damaged dollar. I stand now at the Starbucks door, peering squinting into caffeine chasms. The shadowed crowd seen stimulations, our eyes meeting now across the crowded, empty universe, where SETI warriors search in vain, infinite those permutations, no inhabitations nor congratulations. The waiter weary stumbles, trace lips crashing to the gin-soaked floor, kaleidoscope cup explosions, the diners and the coffee sippers barely notice invisible commotion, continue in their mundane madness, babbling brook conversations and their stretch-eyed revelations. Did I tell you? Well, I never. Our eyes meet. And poem.
There, Rex. I thought this was a wonderful write. And you can't hear me right now, right?
Yes.
Okay, just making sure. I thought this was a wonderful write. And one of the things I appreciate about Rich, what he says in his AN, I was not aware of his poetry before I had been before. I have been investigating him now. From my initial investigations, I am really taken with his style. I noticed that he writes a lot of love poetry, but bringing in mundane features and imperfections, such as smashed coffee cups, lipstick stained blankets, etc. Also, his style is experimental, where he has some rhythm and rhyme and some free verse. I've tried to capture that this feel in my poem. And that feeling that within John Nim's poetry, I thought Rich F. has done a really great job of capturing that. As always, you know, he's got a wonderful alliteration in like lines like cumulus, accumulants, frantic feather, duster, beds, the astral artist, simper sighs and weaves. I'm particularly fond of the mystic manner of the moon, lunatic and dead too soon, gives way to Monday morning, mundane madness. There's this whole idea that we're all mad, but there's two types of madness. There's the madness that reaches out to the moon. There's the madness that explores a realm of possibilities, and there's the madness of just doing the same thing over and over again until you don't even notice, you know, the world of dreams and imagery and creativity that's out there. I liked, he mentions, I stand now at the Starbucks door, peering squinting into caffeine chasms, shadow crowd scene simulations, our eyes meeting now across a crowded empty universe. I really feel like a crowded empty universe was a good way to describe two people who just suddenly don't notice anyone else except for each other. But I also felt like it was a good way to describe how empty some people look when they're just, you know, caught up in that Starbucks or that kind of atmosphere of what I forget what it's called, but places that there's just too many of them on every corner. Like there's no individuality. You know, I thought it was a clever write all the way through. I really also liked your beaded languid love and hope, this white paint, splish, splash, splattered sable sky, a cosmic crazed kaleidoscope, glowing orbs near naked to the eye. There's this really great, to me, observation of seeing the beauty of the universe within those lines. And I thought it was very well done.
Well said. I think up until those last two stanzas, it was a hallowed tribute to the thoughts of Mims to begin with, a tribute to his style, and he walks with it easily because he offers up right there, prime time poet, perfect either channel, epithets and pearls on single thread, and from then he casts his cotton clouds about our heads, the astral artist emphasized. He's kind of hitting on that note of honoring honoring Nims with those number with those stanzas itself. Then he hits on the last two to add his own a little touch of thought. I stand now at Starbucks store. Then he hits on the note of an empty universe where Seti warriors search in vain infinite these permutations, no inhabitations or congratulations, the kind of note of the emptiness right there. And then the waiter who stumbles and drops a tray of coffee and all that, but nobody pays any notice. And then there's the back end, our eyes meet. It's kind of that look across the room, or maybe the look across two tables.
I like that you notice that the first few stanzas seem to come across as a nod, a tribute to Nims. I also wish I had thought of calling the poet Nims rather than trying to memorize his full name. But really great comment and observations there, Rex. And we will have a couple of carryovers for next week. Great show tonight, Rex.
Yes, it was. Thank you very much. And Robbie, Naomi, and Tom, thank you for stopping in and spending some time with us to read and comment. It was much appreciated. And we'll do this again come next Tuesday morning.
Absolutely. And if you don't mind me saying, Rex, join us tonight, everyone, for Twisted Tuesdays, Baskets of Fruit. And Wednesday at 12:30 a.m., join Neutron Bomb for After Midnight with the Midnight Bomber.
All right, gang. We'll see you a little on later and on the backside.